I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Nick Thornton joins me again, the podcaster, historian, and educator. Is the host of Avoid Dance, which is an evolution of his People Doing Things podcast that began in 2014. Nick was gracious to have me on as a guest last fall, and it was a lot more enjoyable than I expected, as I didn't think I'd be a good guest. Nick is a marvelous conversationalist, and this new show combines his talent for speaking to the listener and a taste in music that is uniquely his. His tastes are varied, and it's fascinating to listen to. I keep the show on while I'm working on other things at my desk and turn it up if he has something to say between songs. The website is at pdtpod.com. Nick Thornton is also the co-host with Andrew Bates of That's So MLS, a podcast on soccer. His Twitter handle is at Thorntonosity. Please welcome back to the Plante on the Line program, Nick Thornton. Mr. Thornton, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Pretty good yourself.
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me back.
It's nice to see you again. So what happened to People Doing Things? I mean, I mentioned in the introduction how much I enjoyed being a guest, because I didn't expect to enjoy it as much. Well, we'll talk about that if we want. And then
sure.
I had Christine Quintana on.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and we ended up talking about, she was on the show before me.
Right.
And I followed her. Mm-hmm. And we talked about just how much we enjoyed the experience. And so I did regret that it was no longer in existence.
But want the postmortem?
Sure, yeah. What happened?
So I think what happened with it is I kind of, like, it was starting to peter out a little bit. I had stopped doing it for a few months last year. And quickly realized I kind of needed it. Like, once I stopped doing it, I realized I really missed having that regular show and that regular social thing where I was getting outside of my own head. I was meeting new people. I was talking about art and creative endeavors and all sorts of things. But as we talked about when you came on the show, there's so much work involved in getting guests and booking things that I just started to feel again like it was kind of, that part was getting to be a bit of a drag, and I was getting a little bit down on the fact that, like, everybody and their dog has a podcast now,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, like, true crime things are super popular, and I just started to feel like, you know, is there a place for this kind of thing anymore, of just these kind of random conversations, and am I the person to do it? But honestly, I was just getting kind of burnt out of it. Like, the joy for me was sort of getting sucked out by having to spend so much time trying to corral guests on. And to kind of see my demographics not really shift over the last couple of years, that I was getting a pretty, not like super low listenership, but it was sort of just steady. It wasn't growing. It didn't really matter if I changed things up or changed, like, promotional tactics. It was mm-hmm. kind of the same. And so I actually didn't purposely, like, decide to end it again, and at this point I would still say, you know, it may come back in some incarnation, whether it's called People Doing Things or something else, but I just thought, like, you know what, nobody's gonna hold me accountable to, like, whatever I do next, no one's really gonna care, so that means I can do anything. So that's where I decided, okay, I'm just going to stop doing People Doing Things for now, and if the inspiration strikes for something else, I'll do it. And kind of just one day, I just had this memory of, like, being, you know, a teenager and listening to radio when I had insomnia and listening to, like, late-night programs on CBC
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just, like, weird Norwegian broadcasts that they needed to fill time with. And I just sort of thought, like, you know, there's so much stuff that's, like, hashtag intentional
mm-hmm.
and for very specific audiences. I kind of missed the idea of just a show that really, kind of the only point was just to be weird and interesting and quirky and funny and kind of not really about anything. And that's where Avoid Dance kind of became an idea that honestly I thought of as, like, a little bit more of a joke. And then I just thought, screw it, I'm going to actually make a show.
I always thought People Doing Things was a great name for a show.
Mm.
And so how did you get to Avoid Dance?
And
for people listening to us, it's the word void, and dance. But
yes.
You can say, if you say it quickly, it's avoidance. But it is that. It's the three words, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's purposefully why.
Purposely because I wanted a play on, I think, ultimately everything we're trying to do is some form of avoidance of mortality and the looming fear of death that we all feel. I mean, certainly I'm preoccupied with it. And so I liked something that was like, I want to indulge the existential part of my brain, but also do it in kind of a fun, tongue-in-cheek way. And I knew I wanted some element of music in that as well. The other thing is, I knew a lot of people had said about people doing things that the part they enjoyed the most was just me rambling by myself.
Yeah.
And so I thought, like, well, why am I spending all this time trying to book guests if what people really want to hear is me rambling?
And then you would play music from time to time too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, especially if I had guests on, or like if I'd been messing around with some sort of musical recording myself, I'd kind of throw that in there. And so I thought, well, like, why don't I cut out the aggravating part, which is trying to book guests, and just do a show? And I kind of just thought of it as, like, if somebody gave me an hour of radio time late at night, what would I do? And I thought, well, I'll just make a podcast of that.
And then what I enjoy about it, and it's not the music, as I said earlier, it's not the music, before we started, it's not the music that I'd have on my iPod.
Sure.
Or music that I would seek out. And I think that's the great thing about music, is when someone tells you something that they enjoy or that they like listening to, then they play it for you, and it becomes enjoyable in that sense as well. Were you always musical, say, like growing up? Were you one of these kids that had an instrument that you were playing and...
I was musical in the sense of, like, I'm like you, a multi-interested person. Like, I just kind of like stuff. Yeah. It doesn't really matter
but
what
you play
is.
An instrument, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I
don't play anything at all.
I started playing guitar when I was, 15 or 16.
Yeah.
And I was definitely more serious about it at the time, and then I've kind of been in bands and made music throughout my early 20s. But really just sort of like as a thing I enjoyed to do, it's been a long time since I took it very seriously or thought it was going anywhere.
And so the music that you play on the show, is it sort of, it's not the sort of music that you would play, or is it?
Sometimes, like definitely there's some stuff that I listen to, and I found some great bands that now I'm compulsively listening to. But
yeah,
for the most part, no. It's just music that, ultimately, the thing that's going to make the cut for something I'm going to play on my show is just something where I feel like somebody's doing something different or something that's genuinely them. So things that are really radio-friendly and kind of lack some substance, and it's clear somebody's just decided to write a song to get airplay, or which there's a lot of, versus somebody who's just making music because they were struck by some sort of inspiration or they were just experimenting with a sound. That, to me, is what I'm more interested in, is something different. So, similarly, a lot of the music I play is not necessarily music I'm going to go back and listen to again or keep on my phone, but it's stuff that, you know, somebody who's, like, really gotten into the finer points of Johann Sebastian Bach, and that's their life's mission now, I can appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I stumble across that, and I go, sure, let's listen to some Bach. Why not?
And, that's the other thing, too, classical music, that you can play that without worrying about copyrights and the sort, right?
There's also that.
I guess I asked you about your background or your experience with music in relation to the music that you play on the show, because I don't know, I tend to think that there might be a connection, and maybe there is or maybe there isn't. It's fascinating to think about the role that music plays in one's life.
Mm.
I mean, I can go, if I'm very busy with things, if I don't listen to music, the kind of music that I like, especially, I'll miss it, or I'll want it.
Yeah.
And I remember Andy Rooney years ago said he didn't listen to music, he didn't enjoy it.
Hmm.
And I find that very odd, because I don't think there's anybody like that, really.
I've met a few people in my life that have been like that, that just don't seem to have any, like, predilection towards music.
Or even if you're sitting talking, they don't tap their hand or anything like that?
Yeah, and I've met a few people like
really?
That. But not many.
Really, yeah.
Like, probably three. I think it is something that just innately we're drawn to and we need in our lives.
Yeah.
in some form. And I think for most people, it's a pretty banal, just kind of in the background thing. And for some people, it's a more all-consuming thing. I think for me, it's somewhere kind of in the middle. But I definitely realized, like, as I went to university, got involved in other pursuits, music kind of played less and less of a role in my life. And then I found, too, I was listening to a lot of the same stuff I'd been listening to when I was, like, 20 years old. Yeah. I was just listening to the same kind of, like, 15 artists over and over again without finding new stuff, developing my interests. And so this was also a way to find new things that I was interested in. And have a reason to explore new music.
Yeah, I guess we do, all of us. And at this moment, we all have a song in our head, don't we?
I think so.
Yeah.
What song do you have in your head?
I don't know. Now that it probably just left my head the minute you asked that, because I guess I didn't want to be identified. But it's funny. Like we use it in so many ways, don't we? We use it to drown out the noise around us, or for traveling. You know, to zone in wherever we want to zone in. We use it as we're walking down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Some people use it to wake up in the morning. Some people use it to go to bed at night.
Yeah.
The other thing that I realized in terms of as preparing for our chat today is, and the music that you play is obviously eclectic, and it's some of it's weird, some of it's odd. Some of it's obviously stuff that I've never come across.
Yeah.
It is, when you get to listen to different kinds of music, just how edifying that is.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And there's something that happens. It's like looking at different kinds of art. There's something in your head that really, you do get something out of it, whether you like the music or not.
Yeah.
You like the painting or not.
Absolutely.
And that must be fun for you to program a show where you're listening to not just different kinds of music, but a vast amount of music, and then mm-hmm. picking out what you want to share with other people.
Yeah, no, and that's actually, like, I'm glad that that's your experience, because that's kind of what I wanted, is a bit of, like, an Eraserhead moment for people, where which is part of the avoidance thing as well. Like,
yeah.
Yes, it's a genuine desire to discover new music, but also it's... Like, my hope is that by the time you finish listening to my show, you're not really thinking about anything. Or whatever you were thinking about before, you're not anymore, because you just listen to 15 different genres of music for an hour. And in between that, I've been rambling about space or death or whatever.
Yeah.
That is also a form of avoidance, right? Mm. Like, avoiding thinking about taxes or mortgages or... housing prices or relationships, whatever it is, and just getting the opportunity to get outside of your own head a little bit. And music, I think, is something that is one of the few things that can do that for just about everybody, where it takes you out of yourself and you can just be thinking about nothing, but yet your brain is still being occupied. You're still being moved by something. The interesting thing is the thing that people don't see or hear on the show, of course, is that often I'm, like, sitting listening to, you know, an hour's worth of music to find one thing that I want to play next on the show. So I'm recording the show as I'm looking for stuff, rather than lining up, like, 15 tracks and then recording my in-between pieces. So I can go for stretches sometimes where I'm kind of hitting a wall and I'm listening to tons and tons of music that I just, for whatever reason, I'm like, yeah, no, this isn't the one, or this isn't right for this episode, and I don't really know what I'm looking for until I hear it. So that's kind of the interesting part for me as well, is I really am just having to dive through a ton of music to find something that I think other people will get something out of.
And so that must be fun, then, mm-hmm. to spend the time that you do. I don't know how, I mean, your shows are about an hour, sometimes they're a little bit more than an hour,
yeah.
to spend, say, 3 hours putting a show together.
Yeah. And to me, like, the time I used to invest booking guests,
yeah.
now I'm just sitting listening to music. So it feels a little less arduous, too, that even if I'm hitting a wall and I'm listening to a ton of music and I fall down a hole in it,
yeah.
I come up with nothing, I'm still doing something different. I still feel like, you know, when you're looking at art or you're listening to music, it's never a waste of time, even if you don't like it or something hasn't really spoken to you. And it feels a little less fruitless than emailing back and forth with someone for the umpteenth time, trying to get them to nail down a date to come talk to you about something.
What if you find something that you like or that you'd like to share, but you obviously can't because of, say, copyright or annoying things like that?
Annoying things like copyright. The way I get around that is I've got a few sources that I go to that are exclusively for or have ways of searching copyright-free or share-alike licenses or Creative Commons licensed music, so that I just know whatever I'm coming up with is something I'm going to be able to use. There's definitely been a few moments where there's stuff I really love and it's very clearly got a license. But I've had some successes. I usually reach out to the label rather than the artist, and I just ask the label, because so far with the independent labels I've talked to, they're really gracious in they get what I'm trying to do, which is, like, I'm not making money. It's promotion for their artist and for their label. So they usually say yes, and then I have access to an entire label's worth of music as well. It's not just one artist, because that would certainly take a lot more work. I've done it. There's a couple of artists that I've reached out to directly to say, hey, you've got this copyrighted, but I'd love to play it on my show. And they've also, so far, I've had good luck and people have gotten what I'm trying to do with the show.
And I guess because you, and that's why I asked you about your own background in music, is because you obviously understand, unlike, say, me, the listener, just what goes into creating
a little bit, yeah,
music. Sure. And you, I guess that's why you have this appreciation, or I mean, it's a chicken and egg thing. I don't know what you had first, but you sort of understand the creative process a lot more than, or just as much as, say, the artists that you play.
I guess so. I mean, I think the thing that, like, when I've had a conversation with people, for instance, there's a guy I talked to recently, is a British artist, and he does, it's just weird pop folk kind of music, and he's from Birmingham in the UK, and he's one of those, like, he produces a ton of music, but it's so niche and it's so strange that, you know, he doesn't have a big following or anything. So the fact that some dude in Vancouver reached out to him and said, hey, you know, I love this song and I really want to play it, that means a lot. And I get that, because and I don't mean to be like, oh, I'm doing these people a huge favor. Like, they're doing me a favor by letting me play their music. But I think that they appreciate that I do understand how much time and effort goes into putting something of yourself into your art, and then also not always having an audience for it, or having an audience right away. And so for somebody to just say, hey, I liked your thing and I want to share it with people, that still has some value to people, that that somebody genuinely appreciates it and wants to share it with more people.
And you've done that in the time that you've been online doing podcasts. And, I mean, 2014 was when People Doing Things started. I remember listening to conversations with theater people and artists of that sort, and just how I admired that you got what they were doing.
Yeah, I think people just want to be seen, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially independent artists, is often there's no money involved for them. It's a purely creative, self-driven endeavor that they're deciding to invest their time and their energy into. And so for anybody to appreciate that and give them their time, I mean, with People Doing Things, it was always like, look, I think everybody deserves at least an hour interview focus on them, regardless of what they do, even if it's not necessarily a creative suite, just to tell their story. And I think that people still really appreciate that and value it, and don't often get the opportunity to just be spotlighted like that, that they're just out there doing their thing kind of thanklessly, and for people to come along and appreciate it in whatever form that is means something. And I say too, when I reach out to artists and labels, I'm like, hopefully this is a bit of a bump for you. Like, I want people to discover this, and then I want them to go buy it. Like, I'm not sharing this for free on my show in the hopes that other people are getting something for free. Like, I want them to discover new music and then go support that artist directly.
It's one thing to say showcase somebody or their music or whatever project they're working on, to spotlight it, as you just said. But it's something completely different in terms of what you've been able to do. And I guess this goes back to people doing things and that you have this gift for the conversation. And you're able to draw these people out and to talk about whatever they're talking about seriously, rather than just say give them an hour for them to. I mean, you know, you do play a part in the interview, don't you?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think.
Where does that come from?
Where does the
your own talent say, or your own abilities to bring this out of people?
I think at the heart of it, you know, and. You feel free to chime in here on this too, because you've got it as well. Like, I think it's just curiosity. Like, you can't fake that. I think there's people who are very good at interviews. We've talked about this before, of like people who have a great craft at interviewing. I think in terms of conversation, it's just being genuinely curious. I'm just fascinated by people. I'm fascinated by art. I'm just as curious about, you know, a guy who owns a dry cleaning business and has done that for 40 years as I am for a renowned filmmaker who's at the height of their game. I think both people hold equal value and are equally interesting. And so when I'm talking to somebody, ultimately the thing I'm just trying to understand is like how, like what makes you move? What makes you tick? I mean, we can talk about the weather or our interests or our politics or whatever, and these surface level things, but what I'm really interested in is, like, why this? Why you... Shoot. This is a problem with hand gestures in
why,
this place.
Why the... Why the stainless steel bottle?
It's a problem
water.
With bringing my own beverage container here. Why do anything? That's a question I've always asked a ton of times. It's like, why do you get out of the bed and do anything? Our existence is such a strange thing, and so I'm just fascinated to know what makes people tick. What motivates them to do whatever it is they're doing. And I think that that comes across for people, and there's not always spheres for that. So with people doing things, I did that through conversation with people. With Avoid Dance, it's me in conversation with myself, but also a little bit with these artists that's just going like, hey, here's a guy in Birmingham who's made 17 albums, and he doesn't have a large following, but he just does this thing, and he's completely dedicated to his craft. And I want you to know about it because I think there's value to it.
What do you get out of, and not just Avoid Dance, but people doing things, especially when you would talk into, I hate to use the word void, because there is someone there listening, obviously, and you are listening, you are talking, and as we're talking now to somebody listening to us, we don't know who that is or how many people, but we are talking to someone listening to us.
Right.
What do you get out of it? I mean, especially when you're talking about, say, whatever dread or worry that you're feeling at the moment. I guess the other thing that I've admired about your program is, your work, I should say, is you're able to understand what's going on around us and just how concerned you are about it is just as much how other people are concerned about it or preoccupied with it, if you will.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I definitely would say at times I'm not always sure. I ask myself that, like, why am I doing this? And I know you know that feeling sometimes.
Yes, I'm asking myself now why I'm doing this.
Yeah. Should we get out of here? I think ultimately, like, this comes up on Avoid Dance, and it came up on people doing things too. Like, I think people are terrified. Honestly, yeah. I think that's what it comes down to. And the panic that we all feel, some people are all consumed by it, not everyone. But, you know, I still have those moments where I lie awake at night and I just think, like, oh God, is this it? Like, is this all there is? You know, and why? And I feel like, and then we get up and we put on our human clothes and we go to our jobs or we get on the bus or we hang out with our friends. And then we pretend like that's not how we feel. We talk about all these other superficial things that covers up this panic. And so what I get out of it is, yes, it still terrifies me. But when I have a conversation with somebody that's, and you just sort of lean in and you're like, Joe, do you understand the point of any of this shit? And you're like, no, not really. I feel like when we actually have the real conversation, which is, it's a weird thing to be a human at any time,
sure.
But especially right now. Yeah. It's really weird to be a human being on this planet. and then we talk about that, I feel like we're having the actual conversation rather than this conversation about all these other things that we're consumed with all the time that ultimately probably don't really matter. I mean, not that work and relationships and all that stuff isn't important, but we talk about all these things that are external rather than, like, the panic that we all feel or the joy and the exuberance that we feel. That we, like, everything is this intellectualized version of ourselves rather than, like, what do you actually feel inside? What's happening for you on a given Tuesday when you're not sure what the point of anything is?
But don't you think, though, that sort of curiosity, that sort of wondering who we are and where we are, and do you think that's unique to this time? I mean, don't you think people in previous generations thought of those same things?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then the other thing I was just thinking about as you were talking was a lot of, say, feelings and a lot of those things weren't addressed, and that's why we have some of the problems that we have today.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think what we're doing now is part of a long tradition of people, you know, I think that's also why storytelling and art exists. It's a way for people to express that unexpressible thing that you can't just always verbalize or intellectualize, that's just that inner feeling of the thing that cannot be quite explained. Yeah, I think it expresses itself uniquely through each different generations, and certainly I feel like in the Western world for the last 100-150 years, yeah, we've come out of a time of extreme disconnection from feeling and being able to reconcile that. And I don't know what the trajectory is, to be honest. Some days I feel like we're cracking the thing wide open. Sometimes I think we're backsliding into the past of...
We're at the end of the line, right?
We're at the end of the line, and it's going to be, you know, dark Victorian times for us all. But yeah, I'm excited to see what's next for us.
Yeah. It's something that you've addressed through your work. Is this idea of loneliness and the challenge of that?
Mm.
Because it really is a challenge, isn't it? You doubtless a lot of us have people around us,
mm-hmm.
and in spite of that or despite that,
mm-hmm.
we can still feel very lonely.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm sure that's the same with you. I mean, you work with people, you live with people, you're surrounded by people where you live.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's this thing, and I mean, I've interviewed people in the past about loneliness, I've written about it,
mm-hmm.
and it is an epidemic, isn't it? I mean, it is ruining...
I think so, yeah.
...people's lives, and it's ruining society. I mean, people get ostracized or say, are isolated, and then they end up doing terrible things, right?
100%, yeah.
So talking about it has obviously helped, hasn't it?
I think so. I mean, I think it's the starting point. I don't know that it's gonna necessarily fix everything, but that so far has been my experience. I think people doing things was one way of expressing that. I don't know that I necessarily always called it that or isolated that as the, like, named it as that thing,
mm-hmm.
but I do think it is an epidemic, and it's something that I don't think it's overstating to say that it kills. And it doesn't get that dire or desperate for everyone, but certainly it does for a lot of folks. And I think that that's a huge part of why, like, that unexplained sadness or a fear or thing that people are feeling often is loneliness. And we isolate ourselves in our experiences, whether that's, you know, mental health things or family things, relationship things, past traumas, addictions. Like, people get very isolated in those, and part of it's social stigma, but it's also just the loneliness, that all those things isolate people to feel like, oh, I'm the only one going through this, and we're often not connected to the fact that most people are experiencing things like that, but we're not supposed to talk about it, we're not supposed to share it, and it's weird or taboo if I... you know, ring you up and say, hey, Joe, I'm feeling really lonely and desperate today. It's sort of like, okay, all right, Nick, well, A little dramatic.
We all are.
Yeah, we all are.
What makes you so different?
Exactly, right? Or like, okay, yeah, well, you know, like, get over it. Like, I mean, I'm not saying, like, we should all walk around moping all the time.
Yeah.
But just to acknowledge that, to be like, hey, I'm terrified of what's down the line for us. And sometimes that means that I just feel so lonely and hopeless. I don't know what to do with myself. I think it helps people to hear that. And once you can say that to someone else and be seen and be heard, then I think you can have a fundamentally different conversation than when we walk around trying to pretend that we're all fine.
Is that what people who listen to you say they like about the work that you do?
I'm not sure. That might be overstating what I give to people in my show, especially the new one. Because it is meant to kind of just be an avoidance mechanism, too, for people, that if you just don't want to think about anything, you can listen to some strange space jazz from Norway or something.
Yeah, yeah.
but I hope so. I guess that would be, you'd have to ask people that listen to the show
sure.
if that's what they're getting out of it.
But, I mean, that's obviously why you do it. I mean, that's the other than, say, to promote an artist or just to listen to music. With someone else, your listener, it's a lofty goal, isn't it? And I'm wondering, is that anywhere in your mind as you're doing this thing?
Absolutely. Like, the idea of, the biggest thing is connection. Can I connect to someone else who's maybe having a similar experience? Is why I feel so adamant about expressing things that are actually going on for me. Whether that in the past, you know, that's why I had an anxiety attack on a show and kept it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I more recently have talked about addiction and recovery, because it's something that people deal with. It's an honest thing. It's not meant to be like everybody's airing their dirty laundry or, oh, look at me and look how bad things got. It's just like,
or look at me and how good I'm.
Yeah, no, I now am. I'm amazing and I'm a changed man, Joe. I've discovered life and light.
Be like me.
Be like me. I'm living my hashtag best life. Yeah. It's just like people deal with real things, and it's heavy and it kills people if we don't talk about it. If people are isolated in their experience, it's helped me to hear other people when they've talked about their mental health issues
yeah.
or their struggles, because then I feel less alone. And then I go, oh, this is a thing that people deal with, so I can deal with it too. I can reach out for help. I can just get on a microphone and talk about it. I can talk about it with my partner. Like, I don't need to be afraid of it and feel lonely and more isolated in my experience, because there's other people who are having it too. Like, let's talk about that. I think that's something that people are desperately short of right now.
And that's why it's so toxic in the discourse.
Absolutely. Is the idea that nobody else is going through this. I shouldn't be going through this. How come I can't feel better? And it places all the onus on that person rather than just being able to say, like, I don't feel okay. I'm really not okay,
yeah.
and I need help. Whatever that looks like. And that's different degrees, right? For some people, that's just I really am isolated and I need more friends and I need to get out of my comfort zone. For some people, that's I don't know if I want to live anymore. And everything in between in the human experience. But that desire for connection, I think, is the common thread.
So when there are stretches when you don't do a show,
yeah.
What, I hate to ask this, but what's the reason? Are you obviously busy with other things, your studies and work and the sort, or is it, do you think, something in your own life that's probably best dealt with off mic?
No, I think sometimes, yeah. I feel like the break I kind of had between doing a podcast, at least doing like my own podcast, I was still doing the soccer one.
Yeah.
But even with that, like it's a ridiculous thing to have a podcast about soccer. And I'll be the first person to say, soccer and sports mean nothing. It's a soap opera for, for bro dudes. Like, there's no point to it. You're never going to win all of the soccer. You win your soccer game and your team wins the cup, and then you got to start all over again next year. None of it matters in the grand cosmic scheme of things, and to me that's sort of just a perfect metaphor. But the thing I found was, even that, of every single week I talk to my friend Andrew, who lives in New Brunswick, I talk to him more, and we talk more about what's going on with us and life. Even just the fact that we have an hour and a half, 2-hour conversation every week is pretty unique. And just that alone, I get so much out of just that. Even if we didn't record the conversation or do a show, yeah. Just the fact that it's that regular check-in, you know, before we turn on the mics and talk about ridiculous sports things, it's just a check-in of, like, how are you doing, man? Like, what's going on? That honest check-in and feedback is something that I certainly crave and I need. And I feel like having my own show, whether it's People Doing Things or Avoid Dance or something else, to just get some stuff off my chest and talk about what's actually going on. If I'm not getting it in my friend circle or at work, yeah. I've got an avenue for it. And people seem to, even if it's a small number sometimes, people seem to connect to it and just go, yeah, thank God somebody else feels like this too.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what makes it, the listening experience for me as a listener, all the more enjoyable. Because I'm getting something out of it other than, you know, say a funny anecdote you might have or a joke or a voice that you're doing.
Right.
I'm getting something out of it that I
you didn't really don't like my voices, do you?
No, they're hilarious. They're funny and they're goofy and they're you know, sometimes they make me smile and sometimes I just roll my eyes, you know, yeah. As I'm listening. You know, there he goes again. But it's I hate to use that word, it's edifying in a way, you know. I mean it's you do get something out of it that you probably didn't think you wanted or needed.
Sure. And I'm not saying that these two things are equal, but it's kind of like, you know, if you go to the art gallery and you go see the new exhibit or whatever it is, you may not see anything that particularly speaks to you or you even like, or you'd say, sure. Oh yeah, I'd put that up on my wall. But I still think it's a good experience. It's nourishing for you. And you still come out feeling a little different and maybe a little bit more outside of yourself. You've connected to something a little bit deeper than just, you know, advertising whatever immediate compulsions or needs you had that day, and thought about something possibly bigger than yourself or something maybe totally pointless but just got you outside of your head and went like, oh, that was really weird. I just saw some, you know, ball the size of a room made out of yarn and twigs.
Yeah.
No idea what it meant, but it's just something different,
yeah.
That I think is, it's good for your brain and it's good for your heart to, like you said, it's edifying. My hope with shows like yours and ours, is that it is a similar experience. I'm not saying it's a high culture or yours maybe a little bit more so, but hopefully there's something in it that people find they leave better than when they came in,
yeah.
In whatever form that takes.
So I come here every couple of days. I click on the site to see if you've got something new.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, as I said a moment ago, there are stretches where you don't do anything.
Yeah.
So what precludes you from doing it regularly?
It's a good question. And I knew that I had a feeling you were going to nail me for that one, because I realized I haven't done a show since March, like, 6th or something.
I think it was March 4th.
March 4th.
Who's counting?
Who's counting? No one, clearly. Honestly, sometimes it's just a bit of, like, I don't like doing a thing unless I feel 100% invested in it. And recently, I think I've just had like a bit of a funk in terms of like, okay, I got to go into my podcasting room and sit down and find some music. But sometimes too, it's just I fall out of a routine and I forget how helpful that is to me to have a routine. So it is on my to-do list today of recording a new episode. But yeah, oftentimes it's just I get too inside of my own head. And too wrapped up in other things, and the negative self-talk begins of like, yeah, does anyone really want to hear this show, or do I really have anything to say this week? And of course, that's never really been the point, but I can get too in my own head about it, and then I just go like, yeah, I don't have anything to say. Like, you know, I'll just do it tomorrow or next week or whenever inspiration strikes. But I just go through little periods like that. Sometimes they last a week, sometimes a little more.
You said something in the early part of the interview with regards to the end of people doing things, or the, mm-hmm. the break that you're taking from that.
The pause.
Yeah, the abeyance. You worried about, say, planning it, booking people.
Yeah.
You talked about looking at the demographics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are all the things that I hate about doing this show.
Yeah.
And even though, like, I have a bit of a routine with it, about, I don't know, I guess it was a month and a half ago, I was thinking seriously because I'd hit 15 years.
Yeah.
And was I going to continue doing this in next fall, say? Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, you know, I'm enjoying it at the moment.
Yeah.
We're getting good guests. It's fun still. Mm-hmm. And then so I went on Facebook and I just wrote, yeah, I'm going to be back for at least another year and a half.
Yeah.
And then a week later, I'm like, what the hell am I?
What did I sign up for?
Yeah. And so what have you found useful in terms of dealing with those sorts of things? I mean, you have taken breaks over the last little while. Mm-hmm. Those have obviously been very helpful to you. But getting back into it, I mean, did you find that a challenge? I guess that's the thing that I worry about. I didn't mean to. Well, I meant to interrupt you. Otherwise, it wouldn't. That's the thing that I worry about. I mean, and people say, well, why don't you take a break, a six-month break or whatever, or a year break? But I would hate to think what would happen when I came back.
I know what you mean, and I'm not sure, to be honest. I guess you could say I'm kind of experiencing it right now, because part of me thought, like, with Avoid Dance, I was like, I might do one of these and never do another one. I might do this for the next 4 years, too. Mm-hmm. I might do it every week. I might do it every month. I'm not making any promises. This is just the new thing. And I don't know if that was a good idea or a bad idea, because now I feel no sense of real responsibility to it if I don't do it.
Or an obligation.
Or obligation, right? Is it, you know, like, I did the last one on the 4th, and it was only, like, a few days ago. I went, oh, it's been a few weeks since I've done a show. I guess I should do another? And then I honestly was like, do I want to? Should I? What am I doing with this? And I've had that fear as well. I've had it with people doing things of, like, if I don't continue doing it, what will happen? And I've just become, I think, a little bit more open to seeing where things take me, that breaks can be really helpful. The question is, are you taking a break because you're just sick and tired, or are you taking a break because you want inspiration to strike, or because you're looking for something? And I don't always know the answer to that. And as I said, I don't know. People doing things, I like to think that maybe there's some future incarnation of it. I just don't know what that is yet. And I think for me it was a case of, I don't think I can keep doing just the same thing that I'm doing with it. And until I find a better way, some other inspiration, a different avenue, or platform for it, then I'm not going to be doing it as well as I think I could be, so I want to do something else. I also sometimes just have an internal sense of when something's had a good run, like it's run its course. For me, routines are really important, but I also went, you know, I did People Doing Things for just over 4 years. I talked to just about everybody I'd hoped to when I started doing it, and so I sort of felt like maybe it's, this book isn't done, but this chapter is closed, where I just felt like it kind of reached its natural conclusion, and I didn't want to, you know, beat a dead horse, as they say. And so it was time to just try something different. I still, to answer your sort of original question, though, like, I still feel drawn to doing something on a mic, that broadcasting, podcasts, radio, whatever it is something that I feel drawn towards, and I would like to continue to do in some capacity. That even when I was taking a break and not doing any show, I was still doing a weekly podcast. Mm. Now, it wasn't about myself or it wasn't about existentialism, but I still needed to do a show every week. So me taking a break and me quitting was still doing a weekly podcast.
Yeah.
So I think that says something about where I'm at and what breaks look like for me. Is me taking a break means I'm working full-time, I'm in school full-time, and I'm still doing a weekly podcast.
Yeah, and the next question is, and how do you find the time to do all that?
I'm still constantly amazed at how much time we have as human beings. I was having this conversation last night.
F you. Not enough time.
And I get the paradox. Like, simultaneously, I'm just like, God, where'd the day go? Like, how are we at Saturday? I feel like I just woke up on Sunday morning.
Sure.
And the week is gone again. But I think part of it is just compartmentalization. I also just acknowledge, like, I have a hyperactive brain and personality that needs to, like, chew on a bunch of different things. And so I think for me, is I don't plan a lot, is I tend to do a lot of things, and, or I'm always thinking about things. So when it comes time to do something, I'm not starting from scratch are like, oh God, what do I talk about? There's the inner voices, the inner dialogue is always running. So for me to turn on a mic and start talking, usually there's something in there. I just have to sit down and do it. But it's also, it's about efficiency as well. The time it takes me to do an Avoid Dance episode, I do podcasts where I have to do the least amount of work. And with Avoid Dance, I'm probably spending more time in a way preparing for it. But all I have to do is sit and listen to music. And so I can do that at, 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning. I get up, make a cup of coffee. And, if it takes me a few hours because I can't find stuff I like, maximum, I'm done by 10 o'clock in the morning. And I've got the whole day in front of me. So it's also just sort of like knowing at what times you're going to be productive to do the thing at. That has been a huge thing for allowing me to do the things I want to do, is just knowing, strike while the iron is hot and don't fight against times of day where you're not productive. That's the time to feed yourself or nap or stare out the window.
We all should read more. We should all exercise. But then we think we don't have the time to do either, and so we don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot more than, say, my mouth-breathing friends do, but I still feel I don't read enough.
Yeah.
Like, I read for this show.
And I would ask you that same question. I'm like, where do you find the time to read all these books?
Yeah.
And
you just have to make the time. Like, I was a judge for one of the BC Book Prizes this year, and so I had to go through all of those books. And I was surprised. I don't know if it was because it was a deadline or there was something, there was an important thing at the end of the tunnel, if you will, that I had to work towards. But, I mean, I did get it done.
Yeah.
And I found that, just as, beneficial for me as I'm sure it would be for someone else.
Yeah.
That I was able to read as much as I did.
And the thing, like, we waste a shocking amount of time just
that's
doing nothing,
we realize,
right?
Too, yeah.
Like, and people are like, where do you find the time? And I'm like, well, don't get me wrong, I waste a lot of time too, but when you put down your phone and, like, just leave it in another room, and I don't have cable, and my computer is not set up in a, like, easily accessible place all the time, you end up with a lot more time to do stuff. And I'm not trying to say, like, I've found the secret, and I'm just farting around my apartment having no idea what to do with myself, but that's also because I've kind of engineered my life that way. I don't fill up my days and nights with tons and tons of activities. I want, I try to pick things that I actually really want to be doing so that there is the time to sit and wonder and go, what do I do with myself?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if you're volunteering and you're hanging out with friends every night and going to do stuff constantly, then yeah, you're not going to have time. So it's, for me, it's just really all about, like, what you decide to put your time into.
You went to Nashville recently, I understand.
Yes.
What brought you there?
So, what brought me to Nashville?
Is an airplane?
Yeah, actually, United Airlines. Can't recommend them enough. The short version of this, the short story is, in December, I decided to finally, one of the things I knew that would help greatly influence my health and well-being is to get sober. And so I joined a private Facebook group of people who are in recovery, various stages, various different issues with drinking. And I knew that they did social meetups, and there was this one in Nashville, which I thought, like, it'd be fun to go do something different. And I'm always, I think part of my journey of doing people doing things has been, like, reconnecting with part of myself, finding myself, whatever you want to call it. And I just thought, like, that is not a normal thing I probably would have done at any point in the last few years. Why not? And so this opportunity just kind of came up, and then the closer it came, the more I realized, like, screw it, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do whatever it takes to get myself there and be around these people. And a huge part of that is what we're talking about, is these are people I can have an actual conversation with. That for us, and for me specifically, it's been about recovery. I think behind all of that is connection to other people and getting to have actual conversations with people about where we're really at. And for most of us, it's, yeah, we took a few knocks along the way and we found a maladaptive way of coping. And for other people, that's eating. For other people, that's work. or, you know, any number of things that send people down a path that's not, that's incredibly self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
So to be, to me, to think like, okay, do I really want to visit the southern states right now? Not necessarily. Do I want to go to Nashville and be around a bunch of people who have taken a few knocks but also get it, and they're on the level, and we can start a conversation with how weird it is to be a human being and how difficult that can be, and to just support each other with no judgment and just go, hey, like, let's actually, what would it look like if we were just there for each other rather than trying to always find the answer or the cure to things or the quick fix? What if we just honestly talked about where we were at and tried to help each other as much as we could in whatever way that looks like? And that has just been such a hugely beneficial thing that I was like, yeah, I'm going to get myself to Nashville and go experience more of that. And that's exactly what it was. These are people I talk to every day about the difficulties of being a human being. For us, it's being a human being in recovery. But I think that there's value in that for anyone who just feels alienated, lonely, depressed, whatever that thing is. Find people who also feel that thing and talk about it with them, and really good changes will come.
The recovery part of it, how bad, I mean, how bad was it, whatever it is you were recovering from?
I guess the short answer to that is bad enough to enter into recovery.
Yeah.
For me, I think drinking for me was always like, I think most people have the image of somebody like under a bridge or with DUIs, and that's the point that we think about when we think alcoholic or recovery.
You have to hit rock bottom or something, right?
Exactly. Life is just bottomed out for them. For me and for most people, I think that, that is not the experience. The experience is the quote-unquote functional. There's functional addicts everywhere. They're the majority of people.
You'd be president of the United States, for example, right?
Wait, possibly. but truly, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And for me, it was... I started to crawl my way out of that hole that I kind of had dug for myself, which is just something that continued to escalate. Based off... Like anything that happens to people, right? I mean, you know, people getting sick, people dying, messed up living situations, the stress and pressures of living in an expensive city, all of that stuff that just makes it really difficult to be a human. And finding drinking was a way of coping for me. And it got bad. It got bad enough that that became... not just the coping mechanism, but that became the lens through which I viewed the world. And then things got even more distorted, and it started to not take away the pain or take away the problems. It just came with more problems and more feelings. And the more I kind of crawled myself out of that hole, and the more I connected with other people who also felt that way, the more I realized, like, this is not a thing to be ashamed about. This is a very common experience. And it is shocking how common it is, and maybe even normal. Not to say it's okay, but once I realized how many other people felt the same way, yeah, and for some people, drastically different life experiences and or horrifying things that have happened to them, but we ended up in the same place.
It just surprised me because you have been so candid about things in the past. I don't think you've ever mentioned it until... You mentioned becoming sober.
Yeah, because there's still a ton of stigma around it, right? And that kept me in a really dark place for a really long time, is just the shame of it. I felt so guilty and so just embarrassed. It's embarrassing. Nobody wants to admit that, you know, they need a bottle of wine to function, or, you know, can't interact with people without having some form of alcohol or feel deeply uncomfortable. It's embarrassing. But it is very, very common. And that's part of why I've just, you know, I'm not going to be like recovery warrior and, you know, oh, I've found the light and let's talk about our higher powers now. But I do think it's important to talk about, just like depression or mental health or anything. because until I heard people talking about their experience, I felt very alone, very isolated in it, and that kept me drinking, that kept me unhealthy. As soon as I heard other people talk about it and I started talking about it, that is what led me into recovery and has kept me sober and kept me healthy. So that is, if there's any kind of like answer, that to me is it, is just talk about it. And people are going to feel their own way about it. It's going to have its own, it still carries its own stigma. That's fine. But I think we're at an interesting time where that's starting to shift. And I want, if it all can help anyone, that's why I talk about it. Because when I didn't, it led to really bad things. Mm. And it led to a continuation of that. And it's not something to be embarrassed about. But it is definitely something that, you know, you want to address. And the classic thing is, like, you know, if you think you might have a problem, you probably do.
Yeah. I brought up Nashville because you mentioned on a recent show, mm-hmm. What that experience was like, and you said you liked the South. And
yeah.
I went to Atlanta, Georgia, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now.
Yeah. I'd love to go to Atlanta.
And then I realized, yeah, I just love the South. And yeah. I want to go to all those, I want to go to Alabama I want to go to Mississippi and you've been to Louisiana, have you?
Yeah. And it's heavy, man. I mean, like, it comes with its own bag of stuff,
sure.
Right? Like, there's a long, heavy, dark history there. And sometimes right. One that's still right there on the surface. You don't have to look too hard to find it.
Yeah.
I
guess it's a different way of life from us up north and on the West Coast, isn't it?
Hugely so. And it's good to be around that. It's good to remind yourself that people see and move through the world differently. Also, I mean, to be honest, Nashville's a pretty progressive place, mm-hmm. as places in the South go.
Sure.
So
yeah.
I don't know quite what I expected, but I realized, like, yeah, you know, I had Uber drivers that were just like, oh my God, get me out. I've got this idiot running the country. We're going to end up speaking Russian. So there's plenty of that made me feel a little bit more at ease. But just... one of the things I love about the South is actually kind of what we're talking about. If people are a little bit more open and honest and talk about real things. And yeah, it doesn't mean the point of view is always necessarily
sure,
right-minded,
yeah.
but...
Or the shows that we watch are awfully different than what... You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think that there's something to be said for moving through the world in a way that is genuine and warm and... just saying something a little bit more than just talking about the weather or whatever. And I kind of love that, yeah, you can get in an Uber or talk to somebody on the street in the South and actually talk about something and actually talk about how you're feeling. And it doesn't need to be bright and sunshine and rainbows. And just, that's normal.
Was the food good in Nashville?
Food is pretty good, yeah. I was pleasantly surprised, too, with the variety. I'm a little bit restricted in my diet, so I can't do all the, like, fun barbecue things, but excellent barbecue, and had really good Japanese food there as well, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
But Nashville seems like a city that's kind of, like, having a bit of a resurgence, so the foodie culture's kind of hit there.
Yeah.
You know what? I would say Nashville was easier to find good music and easier to find good food than New Orleans.
Really?
And I love New Orleans.
Yeah.
But, you can just sort of walk around to Nashville and be like, I don't know, that looks kind of good. And it is.
Yeah.
Which I like. I like cities where you can just walk around and find stuff without having to, you know, look up the lists of the 10 best places and just sort of follow your nose or your ears.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing about American cities. I mean, we all have this attitude.
Mm.
And it's easy to do that from Vancouver, Canada.
Totally.
To turn up your nose into just how terrible.
I make it a hobby.
but at the same time, when you get to these places, I mean, they're so fascinatingly rich that you get something out of it that you didn't expect.
Yeah, and even if you don't agree with all of it, it's that thing that putting something different into your brain that you remember, like, oh yeah, people live differently down here. People think about and are preoccupied about different things. I mean, the neighborhood I was staying in, I could tell, like, this is a historically black neighborhood that's now going through gentrification, and to live in that for a few days and see it, see the effects of it, see people who are you know, living in spite of Trump, people having to continue to find a way to live their daily lives, it's a good thing to feel more connected to that, that's what we're all trying to do in some form or another, and it's healthy to be reminded that your way of doing things is not the only way of doing things.
It's good to see you again.
It's good to see you.
I appreciate you coming in to do this, and this hour's just whizzed by. We need to do this more often.
Yeah, I'm always happy to come and chew the fat with you. I appreciate that I was invited back.
Well, you'll be invited. Well, you have a standing invitation.
I only did two voices, too.
PDTpod.com is the website for more. Avoidance is the podcast. Its host, Nick Thornton, joined me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Ponto.